Hello, everybody, and welcome to 3-Point Perspective, the podcast about illustration, how to do it, how to make a living at it, and how to make an impact in the world with your art. I'm Jake Parker.
I'm Lee White.
And I'm Will Terry. All three of us are professional illustrators, and we've all been working for about the last 25 years. We've worked with just about every major publisher in the business, and together we've published about 50 books, and we've all taught illustration at the university level.
Yep, that's right. Each week we're going to come at you with a different topic. Sometimes we're going to agree, sometimes we're going to argue, but each time you're going to learn something new.
Sweet. All right.
I've got an argument.
What's your argument?
Jake and I have no idea what we're going to be talking about today.
That's right.
That's we're back to that again. That shouldn't make you nervous. We've done that almost every time.
Lee has the topic today. He's the one that's done all the homework, and he's just going to spring it on me and Will and get our hot takes on everything, our first pass.
I'll preempt it with this. Normally, when we're doing it this way, I over-prepare. I have all these lists and stuff that I want to cram in, and then we end up talking about something stupid for about 15 minutes and use up all the time. So this time I've planned very sparsely, and I have room for banter.
So you want to say all kinds of...
So we got banter. We got banter time.
Okay.
Okay, so we all give a lot of critiques to students. Would you agree with that?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I agree. Yeah, so I'm giving critiques not only to students in my classes. I'm teaching two classes right now, but I'm also doing the Adobe. I'm one of the mentors for the Adobe artists, and they're working professionally now. And so I just thought it's interesting how many times the same things come up in a critique. We've already done a critique on how to get a critique and all that stuff from that side of it. But I wanted to talk about my topic, which is roadblocks to success.
Oh,
that's okay. My topic, roadblocks to success. Cause I saw some of the same things happening, not necessarily in an individual piece where people are needing artistic feedback, but like what gets in the way? Why don't people stay the course and gradually get better and better and better and better in a logical way? I mean, if you looked at someone's career over time, it looks kind of like a stock chart. You know what I mean? It goes up and then it goes down, it goes up, you know, and I was seeing from the most beginning student to the most advanced, you know, professional, some of the same things happening. And we're having these conversations. So I thought they were interesting. I'll be curious to see if you guys think they're interesting. And then the second part of this is going to be how to get rid of that stuff and how to be great. How do you reach your potential?
That's a good one.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
I like it.
I'm already,
that's all I got so far.
Speaking of students along the way that I...
I'm gonna throw out some topics, just like a sentence, and then we can talk about if you guys know people that falls into or what kind of advice you give them. So the number one thing that I see from people that really gets in the way, biggest roadblock, is no clearly defined goals or understanding of where they're going, and they're kind of doing too many directions all at once. Well, an example of that could be somebody who's going to life drawing every week, which is all these things are good. They're going to life drawing. They're entering a monthly contest like Inktober or Mermaid. They're, you know, taking three classes that are all different, like perspective and illustration. And I mean, they're just doing everything. Do you guys see that a lot with students? And what kind of advice do you give them? Or if they're early professional and they're just like kind of have everything in their portfolio?
Yeah. I mean, I see along this topic, I hope this relates, but I see students, we tell them, you know, we have this, it's funny because we have this school that's 4 years, a university program, and most art schools have patterned their time after that. Is that ideal, or is that just, have we fit an art program into 4 years because that's what they started the university system bachelor degree at, you know what I mean? So in other words, we tell people, here's all the classes you need to take, here's all the skills you need to get. And then in their last year, they start getting, if they actually want to make a living at it, they start getting really nervous. Like, I have to get out of here and get a job doing this. And when I hear you say flounder, I think I'm equating that with not earning money doing the thing that they want to earn money doing. Is that right? Well,
there's that. And then there's also I think it's unfulfilling when you don't have a target that you're kind of shooting at. And so each piece, like you're kind of doing, you do a character design one week and then a book cover and then a concept design piece. And it just, you can't be all things. What used to happen in my senior portfolio class was really interesting. I'd have them do business cards and stuff. And this was before I'm even looking at their work, really. I just said, okay, we're going to start dealing with branding and all that stuff. And people bring their business card up for me to look at. And it says, you know, John Smith. And it says illustration, concept design, storyboarding, graphic design, and 3D modeling.
Right.
And I'm like, you may have done each one of those things, but you're not going to do each one of them. You're not professional level. Yeah. At all of those things. And I see the you know, equivalent of that same kind of thinking, you know, even after people graduate and they're floundering with their portfolios and stuff, and it just doesn't, they haven't picked their market. And again, most of the things I talk about are sort of unsexy version of, like, artists are supposed to have the beret on and be, you know, very artistic, but this is a very business related idea, is to say, where am I going? Where does my work fit? How am I going to deal with that? I mean, I just judged the contest this past week on SVS. We have a monthly contest. And there was a great question. Somebody said that theirs was one of the, I think, honorable mentions. And there was three, the topic was big. And the they had done this illustration of these kind of three little leprechauns or gnomes or whatever around this big beer. And they had too much beer and they were all kind of passed out. But it was done in a children's style. And so the question came, is this okay for a children's book portfolio? And I thought it was such a great question, because it just means that they're thinking about where they're going and said, hey, wait, this might not jive. And that's the, you know, that's the rare kind of perspective I get on that, where they're like, hey, I'm going into this field. And is this okay for this field?
Right.
Most of the time, yeah. It's the opposite.
I think there's two things here. There's focus and there's goals, right? And those can be the same thing, but I think they're also different things. I sympathize with the young 20-something artist who is kind of good at everything, because when you're kind of good at everything, like, the world is your oyster. You could go in any direction, and so you tend to, like, try it all out, and you try to go and do this. You try to model. You try to do illustration, try to do comics. And my advice there is, have fun, try as much as you can, but see where there's opportunity and follow that opportunity if it aligns with your goals. You know, if you don't have a clear goal for your career, a clear, like, picture of where you want to see yourself at age 30 or where you want to see yourself at 40, then you're not going to focus in on the right things. You're gonna be a little bit more broad, but go out, experience those things, figure out what you're good at, figure out what you like to do. You may not be good at it, but you may enjoy it more. That could mean a better level of success for you because of the enjoyment factor. And then lean into that thing that you like the most, the thing that you're good at, the thing that you like, and the thing that has the opportunities there for you. And I think that's like the, if I were to make a Venn diagram here, it would be a circle that says what you're good at, a circle that says what you like to do, and a circle that says what you can make money at. And where those three circles converge, that's the goal, and that's the focus on what you should be doing.
How does somebody figure out what they're good at?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, do it first. And then see what, if people say anything about it, if there's a response to it, if people like it, you know, if you have a mentor, show that person and see what they think. If, you know, post it online, if it's crickets, then, you know, maybe it's not that your quality is enough to warrant comment. You know, if you do get comments and it's negative feedback, listen to that. You can use that to guide you and to steer you in the right direction. I don't know. What do you think, Lee?
I mean, I think it's interesting to be good at something that you might not be interested in. So some of you guys may have a kind of a blank on drawing a blank on what that would look like in real life. When I graduated from college, I had taken half entertainment design and half illustration. And there was a peripheral field with entertainment design. Once I decided I didn't want to do that, because the problem with entertainment design for me is I want to go into children's book publishing, but entertainment stuff was taking too much of my time. but I went into architecture illustration where I'm doing pre-visualization for architects. And that was definitely a field I did not care about, but I was good enough to do it. And, but I knew my focus is in children's books. And so it was interesting because I was doing one thing during the day to make some money, but then I had my eye on the prize and I was always kind of feeding that side of it, even though I was making no money in publishing yet. So you just got, I mean, but you have to take an accurate look at it and say, like Jake said, is like, is this skill applicable somewhere? And, you know, my short-term goals is I need to pay my rent this month. How can I do that easily? And then the long-term goal is where am I going to end up as an artist in 10 years? But you need those long ones. I mean, you guys ever hear that kind of rumor that the businesses in Japan have like 100-year business plans?
No.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't know if that's true. And I'm just kind of ballparking that number, but it's a big number, like way down the line. And I don't think we do enough of that. I think a lot of artists are just kind of doing their next piece. Oh, I kind of like, you know, Trolls. Here's a character design based on Trolls. And then they just kind of go from piece to piece without kind of thinking about the underlying placement of that piece. And then the bigger portfolio idea, how does this piece that you're doing now fit into the overall portfolio?
Yeah.
You know, that's a good point. Cause I had an assistant and, he, you know, he's going to school, he's got his classwork. Part of that is also like to make a portfolio to get a job. And part of that is to like graduate. Right. So there's like these different goals, laid out in front of him, but he also works with me and he sees the projects I'm doing as well. And one day he came in talking, you know, we'd been talking about doing the Draw 100 Somethings project, which it's something that it's like a advice I give to artists who are trying to find their style and try to like tap into creativity and to really flex their creative muscles. And so the Design 100 projects is you pick an object where there's room to design variation in it, right? So, and the other thing is you don't want to be too broad with it. You want to be kind of specific. So you wouldn't say, I'm going to design 100 spaceships. You would say, I'm going to design 100 single seat, you know, fighter spaceships, something like that, right? So instead of for this project, you're doing a Star Destroyer one day and a TIE fighter the next day. It's like, how many different variations of TIE fighters could you design if you had to do 100 of them? And I did this project myself, and it was 100 different like little robots, and they all had the same face, but their body could be anything, right? And the body had to be some sort of had to be linked to some sort of profession or some sort of tool or some sort of job that that robot was doing, right? And so I did 100 of them, and it just pushed me creatively, and I learned so much from doing it because, you know, after about 20 of them, you think, okay, I've exhausted all my ideas. There's no more versions of this character that I could draw. But then, you know, you put it on the back burner for a month, and then something clicks and you think of something, and that carries you through the next 10 designs. And by the time you get to 100, you know, you've really learned how to break through creative block and how to think creatively and how to tap into like doing all these different kinds of ideas. So it's a really good assignment. It's a good project to do, right? And so my assistant, he sees this and he's like, oh, I know what I want to do for my Design 100 things. I want to do animal pirates, right? I think that's what it was. So different pirates, all as animals. And I'm like, that is cool. That is actually a really good idea. And he started working on it. And as he was getting down into it and planning out his year, he's trying to figure out like how he could fit this in and do it. And I said, well, hold on. Let's take a step back. You have some important goals in front of you right now. You have to graduate. You also have to have a portfolio that's good enough to get a job. Is this project going to help you do those two things? Is this project directly applicable to to those things? And he's like, you know what? You're right. You're actually right. Like if I do this project, it's actually going to put off me getting a portfolio that'll get my job. It's going to put off me getting my assignments finished so I can graduate. And so he took a step back and he's like, you know what? It's not the time for me to do this. I'll save this for later when I have, you know, more free time or I want to, you know, practice this type of stuff. And now he's zeroed in on the schoolwork, the portfolio work, and he actually has a job interview at a pretty cool startup place here in Utah. So that's just one example of like, where's your focus and leaning in on that focus instead of just because it's something interesting and just because it's something fun or just something that you're good at doesn't mean that that's the thing you're supposed to be doing right then to achieve the goals that you have.
And that is a really, really good point. I want to highlight that because to kind of back up and speak to that same idea, we gravitate towards easy. And the questions that we're asking you in a lot of these podcasts are not easy. Mm-hmm. Like, where's my career going? What needs to be in my portfolio? Like, those are in-depth questions you have to look really carefully. But doing a mermaid drawing is easy. I mean, like the topic's already there, the subject matter's there, and you can just get started on it right now. So a lot of times your brain, and correct me if I'm wrong, or if you guys think differently, but my brain will be like, oh, cool, that's a concrete thing. I don't have to, it's not abstract. I don't need to wonder how many pieces are in my portfolio or whatever. I'm just going to go do the easy thing, like mm-hmm. the design 100 things. It's not easy mm-hmm. per se, but you know, it's a concrete thing. And then all of a sudden you're exactly right, Jake. You veer off of what the path should have been. It's interesting.
I'm going to jump in on this. And I know that we hit the same themes a lot, and I hope that people don't get tired of hearing the same things, but hopefully we're packaging them in a little bit different way. But going into the idea of your lifestyle and your focus. So Jake, on that last one, you were talking about getting sidetracked on a different project, and that's one sidetrack, but there's so many. And, you know, I know that we've talked about, you know, how much game playing people are doing, and there's probably some people rolling their eyes right now. Oh no, he's attacking my games again. You know, I need those to relax and to unwind. And, you know, I work long enough hours at my job and then I go to school and I need some downtime. And you definitely do. But over the weekend, I watched that movie Free Solo with Alex Hanold. And just as you were talking, I was thinking of a bunch of students I know that were focused and a bunch of students that I've had that were not focused. And I always like to make analogies or comparisons to people that are not doing art, because I think we often tend to feel like it's a little too close to home or personal when we talk about, you know, how much you're drawing and stuff. But if you ever get a chance to see that movie, it's amazing. If you haven't heard of it, it's about a guy who does free climbing. And I followed this guy for the last 3 years when he first kind of got on the internet radar. And the activity doesn't really matter. The fact that he's climbing these mountains without ropes and stuff.
This is a lot of hedging.
I know. Come on. I'm getting there.
Okay. But his
whole life is living in a van and probably close to a river. And he climbs every day. You know, that's what he does. In fact, the reason he lived in the van was so that he could drive to places like Yosemite and just basically camp underneath the wall that he's going to be climbing the next day. And the dedication to his craft, which you could make a lot of analogies to art, the way he climbs, the style he climbs, they talk a lot about that, him and other climbers, and they talk about the purity of what they're doing. But to me, it's the dedication of what he's had to sacrifice to become basically the best climber in the world as far as free soloing goes. He soloed El Cap in Yosemite, and that's his most recent thing. And that's pretty much what the movie's about. But
that community is calling it the moon landing of rock climbing.
Yeah, like it's insane.
It's untouchable.
There's probably no one that will do what he just did. And I think about it though, and I think, you know, he never got, there was no contract. Like if you go and do this, you'll get paid. And as artists, often the chatter that I hear online is, well, I'm not going to do this for this company unless they pay me enough, or I'm not going to do this enough unless I have a contract in hand. And I think that there's some good business decisions that can be made about, you know, as far as, you know, having the right contract and setting all the payment stuff up so you're not getting taken advantage of by companies who can afford it and all that. And I get that. In fact, I just had a project that went south with a company, a popsicle company in Sweden, last week, and I had to fire them because it just didn't work out. So I totally understand the.
How many popsicle companies in Sweden? I know. Are there?
They're the ones.
You basically just call.
I'm not going to call out the name of them, but they have the ugliest Yeti mascot in the business. But anyway, my point is that, you know, if you're an artist and if you are driven to make art, you should be, this should be your focus, especially when you're young. You should be able to, you shouldn't have to force yourself to work long hours and make great sacrifices and say, you know, say no to the friendship meetups and the hanging out and the Friday nights and the set, you know. I mean, there's certain activities that, yes, you're going to do and you need to unwind sometimes, but I think that most of the, I don't know, you guys tell me if I'm wrong, but most of the successful artists I know have had lives that are out of balance, at least for part of the time when they were developing their craft.
I think that's essential. I mean, it mm-hmm. I hate to say it because you do have to lean it so far that way, but I don't know anybody who got who's where they are without that. At least a couple of years.
It's not a 9-to-5 pursuit in the beginning. It's just not. You have to bleed for your art, you know, and you know, this guy, the reason I use this analogy is this guy bleeds, literally bleeds for his craft that he's not getting paid for. The endorsements and everything and the money, it all came secondary to the sacrifice. And
he knows where he's going. Yeah. He's got his goal.
Yeah.
He knows where he's going, and that's what's going to happen.
One and two, like he's such a good example too about this is prior to doing the solo climb, he completely removed himself from all like social media, online stuff. He said that stuff just gets in my head and it's a distraction.
Yep.
And I cannot afford that at this time, you know? So maybe it's like you've got to zero in and finish a project, and it does require that sort of, that sacrifice where it's like, you know what, for the next, you know, 6 months, it's dialing back on all this stuff. And maybe once a week, I'm going to go out with friends. Once a week, I'm going to play a video game or watch a movie. But the rest of the time, it's like eat, sleep, and work on my craft. And maybe that's what it takes, some of that focus and working towards that goal.
Yeah. I mean, you go to any skate park, and you will see kids that are amazing. They're doing amazing things on a skateboard. And it's like, how did they get that good? They weren't born that good. And really, you go into any high or any college art class, and that should be our skate park. And everybody in there should be like, I'm here because this is what does it for me, and this is all I want to do. And yet, I would see students that, you know, like again, you know, I think we talked about this on our last episode. Come late, set up late, pack up early. All the things that you're scratching your head going, I thought you were doing this because you loved it, but it seems like it's you're trying to avoid it.
Yeah. I like the skate park analogy. That's good. Cause those kids fall so many times. I mean, if you're just sitting at a red light watching them skate a handrail or some kind of ledge or something, more often than not, they fall. Have you noticed that?
No,
it's rare that they make it.
If you watch a skateboard video, they show you all the tricks that were made. And then at the end, they show you the outtakes, you know, all the wrecks.
Yeah. And those guys pay for it. I mean, like for us, if we have a bad drawing, just throw it away. But if they miss a handrail, they pay.
Yeah. And they're not getting paid.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's true. So that's good. I did want to go into, I just had a little note about a critique that I went into with my Adobe resident this past weekend. And I just wanted to highlight it because I thought it was interesting about what does it look like? I like to give concrete examples of some of this stuff. And what does it look like when you know where your goal is? And how does that differ from, you know, floundering all over the place? Well, I'm working with Anna Davis Court, which I've talked about her before on the podcast. And we decided that she didn't have all she's wanting to get into publishing. So she has all this children's book stuff. And, but that part is slow, at least in the industry. You guys know how slow that whole thing moves. The whole industry moves slow. So we talked about getting some quicker work. And so we started talking about book covers. So she's still interested in publishing, but now we're leaning towards book covers specifically. So I had her pick something that's in the public domain that that art directors could recognize and see her personal take on it, right? And so she picked Harry Potter. And I mean, she could not have set the bar higher, because Harry Potter is, A, it's done recently, so everybody knows about it. B,
that's that show about the kid that does magic.
I've never seen it, so I don't know. But so it's done recently, and it was done well. And then it was re-released and also done well. So she really so like I said, she set the bar really high, but our conversations about it were really good. So she went through the rough sketches and they were great. I mean, she did 20 and she's a professional. So of course they're going to be nice. And I expect that they're going to look okay. But then I started looking a little closer at them, and they were good Harry Potter covers. And that was my description. She's like, okay, cool. Which one do you like? And I'm like, none of them, because it looks like you're trying to do Harry Potter covers. Mm. She was imitating the look that's already there in a way. And so we had to back up and say, now, who are you? Here's the story, but who are you in relationship to Harry Potter? And how is your work going to look different than that? How are you going to own this subject matter? And so she had to really, I mean, it was really hard. It was like pulling your hair out kind of thing. Like, oh, when she's making beautiful images, but they weren't her images. And so, man, we had to fight for it. And then she finally gets a couple of good ones. And then we started having to, like, she turned it in. I was like, that's good. But, you know, I know the stories pretty well, and some of this stuff doesn't align with the story, like what you're alluding to in the cover. So then we had to get into the actual subject matter. So now we are so specific. We're into the nuance of the story, and we're into the nuance of how she specifically wants to tell the story. Mm. And we ended up with something fantastic. And it was just great, because we knew where we were going. We knew where this thing was going to live. And then we really looked at it carefully. And I don't know, I just made notes on it this week, because it was, the conversation was so interesting to me as we got into what works and what doesn't, because the work is good, but it needed to be better.
That's cool. Yep.
That's a great example.
All right. You guys never let me down. Like, I just said that one sentence, no clearly defined goals. We've been talking for like 30 minutes.
That should just be the topic.
Is yeah,
that...
maybe.
We're gonna, next time, I'm going to give you guys goals. One word.
Pocket lint. Go. Okay, so I'll go into my, unless you guys want to add to that, I'm going to go on to the next.
Before you go into the next thing, let me just add something in there, and that is, with this whole conversation about dialing in and focusing in on what you're supposed to do, and, you know, I will say that in defense of school programs, one of the things, like in the beginning, Lee, you were talking about, you know, first you do a project on a book cover, and then you do an interior spread, and then you do all these different assignments. And that's one of the focuses of school, and one of their responsibilities, I think, is that they want to keep you in the generalist category, so that they don't want you to follow a specific style or person or pattern, so that you become locked in. I'm so sorry, I forgot to silence my phone.
Wow.
This time.
Classic.
Come on.
Classic.
This is amateur hour.
Give me a sound effect for that, Jake.
I got one right here for you. Let's see here.
It's pretty sad, huh?
How about the booze? Can we have some booze on top of that?
Yeah, we got some booze too.
You having fun over there? You done?
I love that.
No, to go with that, they're afraid of creating someone like, let me give you an example. I'm not going to name him by name, but I had a student once who worked at Disney, and I taught him in a workshop. He just showed up because he was leaving California because he couldn't earn enough to support a family of five. He had a wife and three kids. And,
but California is the only place, probably Seattle and New York too, but you could be making six figures supporting a family and still wonder like if you can afford shoes.
Right. Well, and let me back up. He was totally supporting his family. But they realized they weren't going to realize the American dream of having the house with the yard and all that stuff. And that's what they really wanted. Mm-hmm. So their priorities changed a bit, and he got out of the industry and he moved back here to Utah, to Southern Utah. And, one of the things he came to me for was, he's like, I got to un-Disney-fy myself, you know, and everything that he did looked like Disney.
And he, that's tough.
Yeah. And he really struggled. Like, he was really good, but he's like, I'm like, have you ever thought about drawing an eye in a different way? And he's like, it just makes so much sense to draw it. Like, I've drawn it for the last 15 years.
But, a little Lilo and Stitch, yeah, or something style.
In another way. And he really, really struggled with that. And I think that's what schools are kind of petrified of creating, is clones of the individual teachers and, or clones of a style to where you can't break out. So that's one reason why when we're in school, we say, you know, don't draw anime in here. We're going to try to teach you to create your own shapes and your own way of seeing objects and interpreting them. So I guess what I'm saying to this topic is, there should be a certain amount of floundering around, right? Wouldn't you guys agree?
Early, yes.
And don't feel bad if you're in that mode, because that means you're still exploring. If each project is looking a little bit different, that's, in some ways, that's a good thing. You shouldn't just come out of the gate with a style. Right.
Mm-hmm. That's true. There's a certain amount of finding all this stuff, and there's a time for that. As long as you know you're in that mode, you should stay in it and enjoy it and really kind of soak it in, because that's fun, you know, where you're taking printmaking and all these classes, you know, and you never know how it's going to end up. So I love that mode too. The problem is when somebody says, oh, should I quit my job? And I want to be an illustrator, but I don't know what to do. What kind of, you know,
right.
Don't be somebody who's quitting your job if you don't know what your, you know, where your work lives.
Right.
Right. I mean, that goes back to the first thing I said was experiment, try things out, find that thing that you enjoy, that you're good at, but also where there's opportunity.
Yep.
All right. Okay. Next topic.
We've got that one. Okay. So this will be a good one, I think.
Don't add anything, Will.
I like Will's stories. There's the weather in there. It's like, it's a cloudy, rainy
evening. Sit down, son. I have something to say.
All right, next roadblock to success: overconferencing or over tutorialing. Is that a word? too many tutorials, overconferencing, and basically looking too much and not doing enough.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess how I call that is too much downloading, not enough uploading.
Ooh.
Perfect.
Jake's trying to rebrand your podcast here, Lee.
I'm good with that. I don't have Eektober stickers everywhere.
Here's the thing. Like, I deal with this too. I do this too. Like, you'll spend maybe an hour on Pinterest or ArtStation or, I don't know, Instagram, and you're like looking at cool artists and you're saving artwork and you're referencing it, like, oh, this image would be good reference for this project, or this image would be good reference for this character, or I like the composition, I'm going to save that. And it's triggering like some of the same neurons in your brain that are triggered when you create art, except at the end of the day, you haven't created anything. Okay. So it's kind of dangerous. It's kind of like, it's like spinning your wheels a little bit. You're not actually getting traction. You're just absorbing stuff, which is necessary. It's part of filling your creative bank account. But if you do it too much, where you actually learn and where you actually grow and improve is by creating things, by making stuff and posting them and putting them out there for people to see, to get feedback. And that's when the actual like learning happens and the actual growth and improvement happens. So don't think that, you know, doing a reference dive for 3 hours on a Tuesday afternoon is the same as spending, you know, 2 hours actually sketching in your sketchbook. They're two different things.
Yeah. I like to use the red light system for this topic, because it's really tough. And so my red light analogy is green light is when you're doing all the right stuff. You actually have pen to paper or brush to canvas, or, you know, you're actually creating something, and that stuff you should do all you want with no stops. So you got the green light all the way to go ahead. The red light is where you're completely disengaged, where you're on Facebook or you're reading, you know, CNN or news sites or whatever. You're talking on the phone or playing games. I don't know.
Zillow.
Yeah. That's which you're probably looking at a lot of right now. Yeah. So that's red light stuff. And you know, like, hey, you should get off of there. So like I have my kind of compartment in my brain for when I go into these red light things. I'm like, oh my God, I'm in the red. I need to get back over. You know what I mean? It's kind of good for me to classify them in that color system. But the yellow is tricky because, like Jake said, I need the images for different reference fabrics and textures and all the other stuff that is applicable to the stuff that I'm actually working on. But wow, it is a slippery slope in there. And all of a sudden 2 hours is gone and I've done no real work. So you just gotta be careful. So the yellow light's flashing every time I go into Pinterest, or if I'm kind of cruising the internet for a Photoshop brush or something, the yellow light's flashing and I'm like, okay, I gotta get either speed up or stop and go back and do what I'm doing. Kind of like a yellow light at the intersection.
That's good. Will, what do you think?
When he started going down that red light analogy, I started getting scared, but he kept it on illustration. So that's good.
Will,
that's just what hit my mind. I'm sorry.
Go home.
I didn't even put that this together.
Family friendly podcast. All right, next topic.
So, Will, what do you think? I mean, do you go to conferences? How do you avoid overdoing it with that stuff? Because it's so quick. And so, like, you know, say you set up an SCBWI, you know, they have their crit groups. Mm-hmm. And then you go to the crit group and all you do is drink coffee and sort of show each other stuff, but you're kind of not really talking about it. How do you avoid all that?
I mean, it comes down to, I don't know. I've never been the person who talked about doing work. I've always been the person who did work. So I don't understand the mindset of talking about it. And we talked about this in our last podcast too, which was the student who would come up to me at the beginning of the semester and tell me how good they're going to do that semester. And I would all of a sudden I'd go, oh, in my mind, oh, that's too bad. You're the one who's not going to do anything this semester. And the reason is because what they're doing is in their mind, they're trying to make a declarative statement, and they want to do it out loud and they want to do it to their teacher so that they will actually make a change that they want to make, but not bad enough to make the sacrifices that need to be made.
So Terry's law is the more you talk about work, the less work you're going to do.
Well, there's probably some merit.
I've seen a lot of groups of people that go to SCBWI that I feel go as much for the social aspect or more for the social aspect than the work aspect. And, I can't get in the mind of someone who, so when I go home, I play the bass. And I don't want to be a bass player in a band, and I don't want to get amazingly good at it. And I'm okay with that. I just enjoy playing for a half an hour, like 20 minutes to half an hour a day. But I'm honest about that. I'm not saying at some point, you know, the AC/DC guys are going to hear about me and call me up to go on their, you know, their 70-year-old tour or something, you know. I mean,
you're not hoping that a YouTube video of you playing bass at like a club goes
right,
viral.
Exactly. So I don't know.
Lee asked,
how do you avoid getting too much conference, right? Is that's what you were saying, right?
Like, yeah.
Too much.
I've got some criteria around that.
Hit me, because I don't know.
Here's my hard no. I can see you've kind of floundering over there.
I also have something to add too, though. But
wait till Lee gives us his wisdom here.
This is the wisdom. You can write this down if you're a conferencer. nothing worse than seeing the same person at a conference, like in successive years, so 2 years in a row, and they have the same manuscript. They have the same work. So my advice to you guys, if you're over-conferencing or not, is if you're not working as a professional where you're stuck in projects and you're, if you're basically a student and you're building new work, you should have a new portfolio, brand new one, every 6 months.
Yep.
Give or take. That is the minimum. And if you have a new portfolio every 6 months, go to the conference and test them out because you have new work. Now people are seeing new versions of you. You're excelling and you're changing, and that's a good thing. If you're bringing that same old tired work year after year, you're over-conferencing and you're just not doing enough work.
This is the part in the podcast where we get to disagree. So what about the person, what about the person who's got, like, you know, they're taking care of their family and they've got a full-time job and they don't have time to, like, they just don't have as much time as the person who's able to generate that portfolio every 6 months. Is it a path that you're either moving forward and moving back, but you can move at different speeds, or?
I think you can. I think as long as you know, like we were talking about in the first topic, as long as you know that's where you are. I mean, if you're the family guy and you got 1 hour a day, you're not going to probably, you know, excel at that kind of a rate. But you just have to be honest with yourself. And basically my idea is don't replace conferencing with, or tutorials with, real work.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Jake. There's another thing I want to add to this, but go ahead. I want to hear what you were saying.
Well, it actually goes right along with what you're saying. Regardless if it's a portfolio or if you're also like professional or semi-professional, like don't let a year go by without you doing some sort of actual like project. Either you got paid for, or it's like a personal project that that is like, I don't know, a research and development thing for you. You trying something out, seeing how you like doing it, or how the market liked you doing that thing. Mm. That's a good way to make sure that you're, you know, if it's a year, or maybe it's 6 months, or maybe it's, you know, if you have more time, it's every 3 months, once a quarter, or if you have less time, it's, you know, it's definitely like, I think a year should be enough time to finish some sort of project that you could stamp your name on there. What that does is it makes sure that you are spending time actually working on it, making sure it's getting done. You're creating something that you can point towards. You could put in your portfolio, or you could put on your website, your resume, and say, look, here's my latest work. This is the kind of work I'm doing now. And it might even be like a calling card.
Love it.
I'm going to throw something in there that you guys just made me think of. I want you guys that are listening to be student B, not student A. So student A, I would have these classes when I was teaching at the college where there were studio classes where you'd come in, you'd set up your paint. I did, you know, a watercolor, gouache, acrylic, oil. And in some of them, I would set up a still life, or I would project an image on the screen. And they were basically classes where the students were just supposed to get familiar and more comfortable with the medium. So these are people that theoretically had never watercolored, or who had never, you know, painted in acrylics, or had very limited experience with it. And I would have, so student A would set up, and I would, let's say we were painting an apple and a lime or something like that. And I would say to them, you know, a professional who's really good in acrylics could spend 12 hours, maybe even 20 hours on painting this. Now, we only have 2.5 hours in class, so I would like you to spend the whole 2.5 hours painting this still life. And what I would get from student A is someone who really spent about a half an hour in class painting and about 2 hours talking and trying to hope that the time would go by. And then I would have, sometimes student A would come up to me honestly and say, I don't know what else more I could do. And this is after we had gone through, I want you to come up close and look at this object. Or sometimes I would have the object sitting there, but I'd also project it on the screen. And I would say, if like we could paint this in 10 minutes and we would get a really painterly painting, and we might be able to actually get some really fun statements on what this still life looks like. But this one we're going to spend 2.5 hours on. And so in order to spend that 2.5 hours, you're going to have to look at the imperfections. You're going to have to look at the color variations. You're going to have to look at the texture. Come up here and look at this. You see this dimple right here? It's actually got an extra little highlight coming from it. It's very subtle. You may or may not want to include that in there, but you know, we're going to try to get the proportions right. We're going to try to get the edges so that they feel like they're rounding. A lot of times when people paint round objects, they become very flat because they don't understand how to soften the edges and things like that. And all those things take a lot of time. And so I would explain all these things, and I would still get the student that would say, I'm done. I don't know what more I can do. And to me, and some of them were very honest, and I don't feel like they were trying to get away with anything. To me, I think if you're going to be smart, if you're going to play it smart, you've got to be able to try to understand more of what is being asked of you. And I feel like that's where some students were lacking, is they did genuinely seem concerned with just being done and not exploring. I don't know.
No, that makes sense. They're not really playing with the edges. They're not pushing the boundaries while they're doing it. They're just kind of going through the motions.
And they wanted me to tell them what to do. And I was happy to take their paintbrush and show them what I would do, and which is usually what I would do. And say, here's some considerations. Look at how crisp you made the edge. But an edge doesn't look like that when it's on a round object. And I would say, here's ways of softening it. We can play with the background, and we can pull the background into that edge a little bit. But I felt like I wasn't getting much experimentation from them. And I feel like as an artist, yeah, you've got to be a tinkerer.
You got to go nuts with it and really kind of deconstruct it. And,
you're an inventor. And
figure out what you want it to
look. An artist is an inventor.
Can I add a non sequitur here? Because Will brought up a topic. This is a non sequitur. It has nothing to do with the topic today. And that is, if you have teachers that don't do demos, you need to go find another school. That there is nothing worse than a teacher who won't step up to the plate and do something. And there's a bunch of them out there. I had a teacher in my grad program where we were struggling with something, and she had some pretty good examples of what we were struggling with in her portfolio, and asked for a demo. And she said, I don't show people how to do it. She just gives assignments. Right. She would just flat said, no, I lost all respect.
There are a lot of teachers that will actually use that as a way to either they're scared, or they are scared of their inadequacies, or they're just flat out lazy. I've known teachers who are very capable, but who don't care, you know?
Yeah, it sucks. I mean, you should have teachers that every single class that I taught, and the teachers that I respect, teach the same way. Is if you have a problem, I will open up a blank canvas and start and show you the advice I'm giving. It's easier for me to do it that than to, and I'm not telling you the only way to do it. I'm saying, here's some concerns and here's how I would solve that concern. And you got to figure out your own way. But here, I'll at least step up to the plate. So sorry, that's a non sequitur, but those kind of teachers drive me crazy.
I'm going to give a shout out to the guy who hired me at UVU back in the day, Perry Stewart, who, when I had a class that was in the same room as his right after his, he would be chewing into my time, helping students, painting on their paintings, drawing on their drawings, and just sitting down and giving them the best time. And I would set up, and I didn't care. And sometimes he would be quietly helping them into my class as I started teaching. And I thought, you know, he's not getting paid extra for this. He is dedicated.
That's super cool. I can't believe that I can't believe that would be acceptable.
It's not acceptable, in my opinion, but it's so stupid. Anyway, moving on. A little addendum to the over-conferencing and over-tutorials. One of the roadblocks that I see is students get in a practice mindset. And normally I'd say practice is good, like Will was just saying. I mean, practice is a good thing. But not when you never put it on the line and try to actually make something of consequence, make something that means something to you. I saw this happen over and over with figure drawing, where somebody would get really good at figure drawing, especially in quick sketches, like 5 to 10 minutes. And they start getting feedback saying, oh man, everybody gathers around, it's so pretty. And then they fall in love with that. And they never, you know, 2 years go by and they've never actually made something that says, hey, here's the thing I care about. So that's one side of it, is like basically just getting the props for being able to do something really well. The other side of that mentality is, if you never put something out there that means something, you never risk failing.
Right.
And so there's a little protective version of that too, where you're just like, well, oh, I'm just sketching. Oh, I'm just, it's just practice. You know, I see people post stuff like that all the time. Oh, it's just a work in progress. It's never, hey, this is as good as I can do, and I hope you guys like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Anything else to add to that one, or we want to move on?
Nope. I'm good.
Okay. So this one happens a lot, even with professionals. I mean, I noticed this at the CTN conference quite a bit, and that is just doing cliche subject matter and cliche topics. Is there any way you guys get around just bringing up those same zombies, is what I call them, where they just, it's the concepts that never die, the monster under the bed, the, you know, can you guys think of a couple of cliches? The sexy little mermaid that we saw at CTN. Oh my gosh. If I never see that again, it'll be too soon.
So you're saying, how do we help students understand that these are,
well, not just students, but how do you get around it for your own work? How do you get around, you know, I mean, Jake, so a million people going into concept art, draw a spaceship. Well, I mean, is the past not equally interesting? Like drawing an old, I don't know, my pirate vessel that's sinking or something, you know, something from the old days versus this future stuff. But I just see the same thing over and over. Oh, I'm going to be a concept artist. And then I see this kind of general concept art portfolio. How do we get around that? How do we get students around that? How do we get around it?
Yeah. So I think the problem there is, you know, and you see this at CTN also in like style too. There's like the LA animation, like style that, that everybody has, that it's like a elevated modernized version of Mary Blair. And I'm not knocking it. I think it's cool and it definitely has its place, but when 100 people are doing the exact same thing, you know, you start to think like, how can you set yourself apart? How can you differentiate yourself a little bit? And that's why I think, like, you know, just to call out one person in particular, Corey Loftus, he's in that scene, but he doesn't do like the flat painted Mary Blair style. He's got this, it's this really interesting mix of Mel Blanc. What's the guy's name? The guy that did Bugs Bunny. Is that who it was? Anyways, he's got like this classic Bugs Bunny Looney Tunes style mixed with a little bit of what Disney does, mixed with like some really edgy kind of more modern take on things, because he does have this background in video game comic art. So the thing that separates him, and you know, he's gone on to art direct Wreck-It Ralph, and you know, been like a key like artist and art director on several of these like Disney projects, and really respected and looked up to, and his style kind of differentiates himself. And what he's doing is he's putting together, and this is where I was originally going with, is we all have these like dots that we collect. You know, anytime you have an experience, anytime you see a movie, anytime you talk to somebody, you collect a dot, and that's a reference point that you know you can come back to when you need to create something. When you create anything, you're connecting these dots in different ways and interesting ways. And so often what happens is you can see the same pattern that someone else has put together with their dots, and you might put it together, you know, 10 dots, and then add like an extra 12th dot, or switch out two or three of the dots with a couple of your own dots. Then basically what you're doing is making something that's maybe original to you, but maybe derivative, maybe, you know, something that is in alignment with what everybody else is doing with those same dots. The way to separate yourself is to collect dots that other people aren't collecting, and connect those dots with each other, or connect the dots that other people have collected in different ways. And that's what I see like Loftus does, is anytime he does his personal work, it is way out there. It's just like the weirdest, funniest stuff, like zombie pigs, you know, like over thing with this zombie pig and this guy hunting the thing. And I looked at that and I was like way out there from what I saw other people doing for Inktober as well. So that's just my take on it.
That's great. Yeah. That's great. I've got a version of the dots too, that when I'm sketching out a concept, I get it kind of in my sketchbook or on my iPad or whatever. But before I paint it, there's always a gap where I will spend a day or two doing other stuff and I'll come back to it. And I have this little list, and I'm not going to read the whole list, but some of the key things on the list are, I ask myself, is what about this is interesting? And if I can't answer that, we've got a big problem. And the next question is, has this been done before? And if so, am I adding any new information to this? And if I'm not, then I really, if those questions are about, nothing really makes it interesting and has been done before, then the only place to go there is, am I trying some really experimental painting technique that will add something different to it? Otherwise, I already know that, if I got the monster under the bed, what makes that interesting? Well, it's a monster under the bed. Okay. It's a story that kids can relate to, I guess. Has it been done before? Yeah. A billion times. If you Google it.
I have several versions of my own.
My friend calls this the Pixar pass. If you could take something that's been done 100 times, but then do it in such a unique way that like it's cool and it's refreshing.
Yeah.
Then people will give you a pass for it. So Monsters Under the Bed, right? They did an entire movie, Monsters, Inc., and a sequel to it, Monsters University, right?
Yeah.
And so they're kind of like the definitive authority now on that Monsters thing.
But they did a great job. Yeah.
Yeah. You look at like Incredibles, that's basically the Watchmen meets the Fantastic Four, right? It's so, it's not that is, people have already seen The Watchmen. They've already seen The Fantastic Four, but putting them together and doing it in this very family friendly, like universally like acceptable story format, that's something new and that's something refreshing. And then treat it with like the actual style that they did it in, which was mid-century modern type of approach to it. Now you're getting into territory where you are like being original and being unique. And I just want to add too, like Mel Blanc was the voice of Bugs Bunny. Chuck Jones was the artist that I was trying to remember. So
okay.
I got my names mixed up. I just knew that there's somebody listening to this screaming at their phone, like, it's Chuck Jones.
Well, it was the cat over there at Lee's apartment house over there. It was your cat that was screaming.
Yeah.
I have another hint or tip, I guess, for that kind of stuff on cliche topics is just look and see what's out there and then add some kind of twist to it. And one of the ways that we did that in my concept art class was we went through a bunch of portfolios. We found a bunch of, let's say, character design, for example, or monster design. We noticed after looking through a bunch of it that all the monsters are mad. All the monsters are just angry all the time. So the assignment came, make the scariest monster you can, but make them embarrassed. And make them nice. Or we took another prop project and we had it, instead of it looking really lethal, it had to change from a very benign object that somebody would not associate with being deadly to some kind of deadly mechanism that would kill you, but you wouldn't know that it's going to be a dangerous item.
Yeah.
And it was good. It was all you had to do is just change the question of what you're doing. And it brought up fantastic stuff.
You know, one of the things I think is a problem is that a lot of people have poor taste. I'm not kidding though. It's like, no, when we've talked about this before that, it's part of learning to see. Right. And so some people, sometimes I'll have a student and I was like this. I remember I tried to, they were hounding us in school about developing our own style. And so I was like, okay, well, I've seen some, I would see people drawing faces in different ways. And I thought, oh, what if I like really made these faces more geometric? And I came with like a kind of a semi-cubist style to my teacher. And he was like, I've seen, he said it just like, I can hear him saying it. He said, I've seen people try to pull this off before. So number one, you're not original. But two, it never works because it's not appealing to see a human face in more of a rigid, you know, I'm talking like the head being more squarish, you know, and you know, mm-hmm. hard edge is more like a robot or something. And I thought, I was basically, I remember my thought process was just be different. If I draw this in such a different way, then maybe I can make it my own. And then maybe people will like it because it's unique. And his response was perfect because it was like, yes, it's unique in a way, but it's also ugly and it has to also be appealing. So let's add to your list of things to do, also make it appealing. And we actually had a student at SVS who was kind of doing that. And I was trying to steer him in the same way, kind of, you know, I see what you're trying to do. It's neat, but will art directors and editors find it appealing enough for their audience to hire you to do that?
That's appeal is something, I don't know, man, that's a little hard to teach.
Yeah. It's an X factor for sure.
Yeah. Cause it's
have
like
good taste, you know, like don't have bad taste.
I know an artist who's a great illustrator, but who the characters are so unappealing that I can't look at the work. Mm.
If it's one of us, don't.
His name's Will.
If it's one of us, don't say.
No, I would never say anything. I mean, and that's just my opinion. I mean, there's other people. He gets hired and stuff, so other people like it. But I don't know. You're right. Appeal is a fleeting kind of thing to try to capture.
I think the slang term these days is don't be basic.
Don't be basic. You're basic. I don't get that one.
I don't know.
These kids today.
Kids.
All right. Should we end it? End it with you're basic.
let's just review. Let's wrap this up, but just do a quick fire round review of what we talked about. So roadblocks to success are number one. You got to have, or here's a roadblock is you don't have focus and you don't have specific goals. Okay. Number two, you're spending too much time conferencing or going through tutorials, spinning your wheels, and not enough time making actual work and making actual like progress on those goals. And number three, you're not digging deep enough to be, how would you put it? You're not digging deep enough to be original. You're sort of doing a surfacey approach to the work that you're
four,
doing.
Four, don't put ketchup on a steak.
Oh, I like ketchup
on
steak.
Not a good porterhouse, though. You know, like...
Is that going to be what we disagree on, ketchup?
Really?
Jake had just wrapped it up so nicely with a bow, and then Will throws...
That's because Lisa told me that you like ketchup on your steak.
Will,
I haven't eaten.
You're not invited. You're not invited to this podcast anymore.
I'm a vegetarian for the past year, though, so there's no steak or ketchup.
It worked for the story to say that Lisa's greener.
Is ketchup non-vegetarian?
Well, there's no steak, so there's nothing to put the ketchup on.
I guess what would you?
He puts it on salad.
On French fries,
veggie burger,
salad.
It's true.
I love your reason for being vegetarian too.
Oh boy.
Just because.
Oh boy. Yeah.
Just felt right.
Just because. I have no reason. Just want to do it.
Just felt right.
All right. So let's I'll take
sponsors,
it out of here.
Who 3-Point Perspective, Jake?
Oh, yeah. Today's episode was sponsored by svslearn.com. If you want to check this thing out, we've got like a 7-day free trial for svslearn.com right now. And you can go sign up, get into a class, see if it's for you, see if you like the teaching style, see if you like what you're getting out of it. And if you're liking it, you don't have to do anything. You'll just be automatically subscribed. So that's it's like a win for everybody. You get great content, great teaching content.
Did you see the SVS commercial during the Super Bowl?
Oh, that was so cool.
Yeah,
I loved
it. It's amazing. They really knock it out of the park.
It was awesome.
Yeah. I can't believe they got all those actors for that thing. That must have been They must be doing good to they're afford just, that.
They're doing well, yeah.
I guess. All right, we're being done. All right. Your hosts have been Will Terry, Lee White, and Jake Parker. Will Terry can be found at willterry.com. Check out his artwork there. And if you're on Instagram, it's at Will Terry Art. Lee White's website is leewhiteillustration.com. And if you're on Instagram, it's Lee White Illo. And Jake Parker can be found, that's me, at mrjakeparker.com. And if you're on Instagram, it's at Jake Parker. Podcast edited by Alex Sugg. Great work, Alex. We appreciate you, all that you do. He really has a lot to deal with editing our podcast. So we appreciate that. If anything sounds good, it's his fault. And if anything sounds bad, it's actually our fault. It's something that we're doing wrong on here. So special thanks to Tanner Garlick for his show notes and making sure this podcast gets posted up on time. And he does an illustration for each episode. You can check those out at the podcast section on our website, svslearn.com. And if you like this episode, please share it around. You can subscribe to us on iTunes. You can listen to this podcast on Spotify. Wherever you go, and if there's possible, leave a review. We'd love to hear what you think. And if you want to join in on this discussion, what we talked about today, log on to svslearn.com and click on the forum tab. And there's free forums. Join up there. And there's an episode post about this episode in its own thread. And you can join in and talk about, or you can just let us know what your thoughts are about these roadblocks to success. All right. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time.